Claim Edge, your resource for litigated claims management and resolution. I'm Jim Chapman, your host. My guest today is Max Brusky with Gallagher Bassett, a leading third-party administrator of all types of claims, both in the United States and internationally. Max specializes in transportation accident claims and U.S. litigation. Max shared his story of how he got into transportation claims and his professional journey from a practicing trial attorney to managing some of the most challenging trucking lawsuits around the country. I enjoyed the conversation with Max, and I'm sure you will too. Because the Claim Edge podcast is focused on litigated claims, today we'll be talking with Max about trucking claims lawsuits and how technology is having an impact on litigation and claims management. Max, welcome to the Claim Edge podcast. It's great to have you as a guest on the show.
Jim, thanks a lot. Thanks for the opportunity. Happy to be here.
Max, we were talking a bit about your joining Gallagher Bassett a couple of years ago. Can you share Gallagher Bassett's approach to claims handling and how you found it a good fit?
Gallagher Bassett, you know, is one of the, you know, the larger third-party claims administrators in, you know, in the United States and abroad, even, you know, several offices in the UK and Australia, New Zealand, and elsewhere. Before I had a lot of experience with them, even as a client, because I was a client of theirs at a trucking company. Before I joined GB, they went in a direction of having a specialty practice that was organized around practice groups and in certain industries. So they have healthcare, transportation, cyber, pharmaceutical, construction, you know, with more to come. And it's kind of a change in the traditional model that has generally been organized around clients and serving whatever clients may need. And, you know, some of the large clients have workers' comp, they have construction defect, they have auto liability, premises liability, you know, on and on and on. So for what GB can do through the specialty practice format is offer specialized expertise and kind of leverage that into better claims outcomes.
So how did you get into the business?
What's your pathway?
Well, I've been a practicing lawyer I passed the bar and graduated law school and passed the bar in 2000. And when I went to law school, I wanted to be a railroad. And when I started off, I wanted to be in kind of like the regulatory mergers and acquisitions, you know, that was just at the inception of the Surface Transportation Board. I was really into that sort of thing and you know, market regulation stuff and all that sort of thing. And when I went to law school, I went to DePaul, but it's in Chicago, and that at one time Chicago was the railroad capital of the United States. But the market had changed over the years, you know, as a lot of people know, you know, just from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and this was in the late 90s. And I wound up getting into tort defense. And I started off my career with Chicago Transit Authority in Chicago. I was really, really fortunate to get hired as a summer associate. And it was kind of like the first year they had this program. And there was just me and four other law students. You know, it eventually expanded. So it was a really good opportunity. And I just happened to fall in with a group of senior lawyers. And I started off in subrogation, which was pretty fascinating when you had, you know, that fleet of buses and the accidents they would get in. And obviously, they weren't all their fault. so the subro department was pretty healthy. And I was even more fortunate that the first week I was there, the subro manager went on vacation, so they just said, well, just go sit in his desk for answer his phone and this sort of thing. So I got thrown into the fire really quickly, and then it just kind of developed with the senior lawyers that I started working on, you know, for personal injury defense. And that was with the buses, the train, the L trains, yeah, the platforms, name it. So once I got to try my first case, my first jury trial, I just fell in love with it.
I know a lot of attorneys who were hooked by the excitement of trying cases. What took you from trains to trucking?
After my first, you know, my first couple of years with the CTA, back in those days, they, you know, their insurance program had an excess carrier and, you know, that sort of thing. So I went to go work for the law firm that represented the excess carrier And, you know, being a young, enthusiastic attorney, I wanted to go work on the worst of the worst cases, which I got to do that as well. And then I moved in kind of, you know, as a third or fourth year lawyer, you're not going to be the first chair at catastrophic injury, you know, in catastrophic injury defense cases, but you do get a chance to, you know, to be the lead associate on those and oversee discovery, prep the case for trial, and even get to do a couple things at trial as a second or even third chair, which I was fortunate enough to be able to do that a couple times over the years at, you know, a couple insurance defense firms that defended the, you know, catastrophic injury cases. And that's where I really started getting into trucking back in those days, because we had to work on a lot of trucking cases as a transportation oriented person, that appealed to me as much as anything else. And I found out as things have gone on over the years, I like it even more and more. So I've never been far away from it. Now I'm just getting further and further into it as my career's developed.
Well, trucking litigation continues to grow both in number of lawsuits and in claims severity. I know you later went in-house for a trucking firm. What was that like?
I did, yeah. So I worked for a couple of firms, and then I was actually on my own for a couple of years as a solo practitioner. And my specialty was still transportation. Did a lot of subrogation work for transportation clients, and a lot of insurance coverage, you know, during that time as well. And then I started out as the claims director for a large fleet that we had. Just under 3,000 power units when I started with the company, and then there was an acquisition while I was there that took the company over 4,000 power units, and it was operations were nationwide in scope, literally from coast to coast, all domestic anyway, but from coast to coast, New England to Florida and California to Seattle, and pretty much everywhere in between. And the work that I had before that, even when I was on my own, I had one client, the National Coordinating Council, I guess, for lack of a better word, on for their subrogation program. And the firm that I was at before then, I also did a lot of national council work. So it was a really, really good fit. And doing the national council work, especially at a pretty young age, I was only four or five, six years out of law school when I started doing that and started overseeing, much more senior lawyers working on cargo claims, different agency collections, and then eventually into the, tort defense and subro area. That was really an eye opener. And it's, as a practicing lawyer, you're not going to be licensed in every state, maybe a few states, and you'll be an expert on those courts and on where you're most familiar, obviously, where you spend your most time in litigation. But having a national perspective is really that's a different ballgame, a different skill set. And I feel very fortunate that I was able to get into that fairly early on in my career, and then kind of as the claims director for a large national fleet, able to see this development, that development, and know what, you always read about bad jurisdictions, but you really get to know them when you're overseeing those claims.
It sounds like you got bit by it 20 years ago and never looked back, right?
And never looked back. That is a very good way to, that's a very good way to put it.
I know you made the move a couple of years ago to the major case unit for Gallagher Bassett's transportation practice. What's that been like for you?
Yeah, so kind of to go back to what we had before, when the when the specialty practice started up, it started off with healthcare, and then transportation was the next specialty group to come online. The others have come online since then, and continue to come online. But the way the transportation practice was and has developed is that the primary focus has been on major cases. And I think it's worked out really well, because the major cases are really where you're going to have, the nuclear verdicts that everybody talks about. And it is the high exposure things. And it's the cases where you see a lot of the leading edge of legal developments, and we deal with, the things like litigation funding and agency questions, direct actions against motor carriers, that sort of thing. So we see a lot of those things, and they're present in every case. It's the law that applies in each state, and we have to deal with federal regulations too. But when we're dealing, with the major cases for fleets and insurance carriers and a lot of captives are in our space as well, those issues just become more acute, you know, as you can imagine. So what we bring is a lot of, you know, we have senior resolution managers and people that have a lot of industry experience and are very, very comfortable with, not just comfortable, I shouldn't say that, but are excel at litigation management. And not only that, like I, you know, just to go back to what I said before, our clients are nationwide as well. I mean, you know, some of the fleets that we service are nationwide fleets, and especially in the captive space, where most captives don't, some of them might have a regional focus, but most of them don't. They have a, you know, exposure centric. It's, you know, it's exposure oriented. So the captives that we deal with in the transportation program are all, you know, trucking companies and specialized kinds of trucking companies with where, you know, that deal in warehouse logistics, that sort of thing. But they're also nationwide. So what our people are really good at is adapting from, you know, California to Texas to Arkansas to Oklahoma and knowing, identifying, you know, what laws are favorable here, where there's a potential change, you know, what litigation environment you're dealing with. And that's really what the transportation practice and the major case unit bring to the table now is claims professionals that are very, very good at that sort of thing. High exposure and national focus.
Does that expertise then translate into, you know, I'll say success in keeping claims out of litigation?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, because one of the things that we really want to focus on and especially things that our clients look at, and your Claims Edge deals with this, you know, we're both attorneys and we both, you know, so like the best kind of claims are the ones that either aren't a claim, don't go into litigation so you don't have to deal with legal expense as much as, you know, that's how attorneys, you know, that's what we all do for a living, right? But one of the real primary areas of focus and the thing that we can leverage the most is the fact that our people are very experienced in dealing with plaintiff's attorneys and claimant attorneys. And it's not a plaintiff until it's, you know, until there's a lawsuit, right? So best to keep it in a claim situation before it gets to litigation. And what our people are able to do is deal directly with plaintiff's attorneys as, you know, as equals, as just as experienced. Just as experienced in a lot of occasions with the jurisdiction and that sort of thing, in order to keep cases out of litigation. And I think really one of the overarching situations is that it doesn't mean that we're not communicating with defense counsel. It doesn't mean that we're not going to retain defense counsel where it's appropriate to retain privilege, you know, to conduct field investigations and, you know, in a more intensive manner and to supervise field adjusters and to keep it under, you know, under a privileged umbrella. So it's not necessarily to the exclusion of that, but what our people are able to do is to kind of cut down on some of the things that the outside counsel might do and be able to, I always, in other presentations and things that I give, I'm like a rapid response evangelist, I like to call myself, and those things, they're best not in litigation. Trucking cases seldom get better if they go into litigation or as litigation develops. So it's really, really about early resolution. And I'm not saying, you know, anything that isn't well known on our side, on the defense side of the industry, and probably applies across the board, but particularly in trucking claims, because, you know, it's seen, accident scenes can develop so and deteriorate extremely rapidly. So rapid response is really important, and that fosters the early resolution.
So a lot of things are driving more litigation today. Social inflation, litigation funding you mentioned, things like attorney advertising, and they're certainly driving more attorney representation of claimants. So I'm sure you're often dealing with an attorney for the claimant from the very outset of the claim. Are you doing anything to keep track of the plaintiff attorneys that tend to be involved in these cases? And more specifically, how's that helping from the standpoint of getting better results for your customers?
Yeah, sure. No, that's a really good question too. We don't have any formal tracking system for that. But one of the things we rely on is a lot of communication, not just with our defense counsel, but internal. And we have regular roundtables, you know, among our whole group. And the questions that always come up, you know, who's the plaintiff's counsel, who's representing the claimant, you know, what jurisdiction, so, you know, the way it goes, well, all right, so what jurisdiction is it? What state is it? What city is it? Oh, well, the next one is, well, who's the attorney on it? Oh, I've had cases with him or her in the past. Oh, you know, I know somebody who knows him. I know somebody who's got a case with him right now, you know, and that sort of thing. So it's really more about communication and kind of staying on top of things. And I with most of, you know, and this is kind of the, you know, the Max take on things as far as that goes, is that in most localities that, you know, the plaintiff's bar just is very similar to the defense bar in terms of it, you know, it evolves and people come up and people retire and people move on. So there's always an element of churn that's going to happen. And that's the thing that I think, you know, we try to really stay on top of in terms of the internal communications that we have. And one of the things that kind of before that I wanted to mention was we always talk about things like aggravating factors. If there's, you know, hours of service violations, if there's cell phone use, you know, those kind of things. But one of the things that we always talk about is, or that we always try to identify, is who is representing the claimant. And it's one of the things that we always look at. And we do have it set up in our, you know, in the information, the RENA system that we have, so that you can look to see, you can track things by attorney, and we can see that, and we can generate reports on that sort of thing. It's not going to say, you know, it's not going to give you, well, they got a $30 million settlement last month or something like that. We're not going to be able to get that necessarily, but we're able to identify, at least in our numbers and our system, over all of, you know, all of GB, to try and identify, you know, who's showing up the most and who's showing up where and on what kind of cases. Because one of the other things that we have too is that some of the claims that don't look like there would be developing into something, I think we all see, especially more today, that something that looks small or minor often turns into several surgeries and, you know, multi-million dollar settlements on the road, and that's down the road. And that's really the kind of thing that we try to avoid. And one of those kind of things that you can use to identify those situations is certainly who the representation is.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're using a little piece of technology. Maybe it's a, you know, a system or a spreadsheet or something like that, but there's a lot of tribal knowledge too that gets shared, right? Yeah,
that's a really good way to put it. I think, you know, and you know, from dealing with our, you know, our defense organizations and things like that, we always talk about, well, you know, there's a lot of, you know, so much information sharing. And I actually think we do that pretty well. I think we don't give ourselves as much credit as I think we deserve, because in generally speaking, if anybody, and it's certainly on our team, if anybody has a question, and I think most, you know, most claims organizations across the country, especially in the trucking space, you get to know who the you know, quote unquote players are. And really, it's a lot just from talking. You pick up the phone. Have you ever had such and such and such on a case? I've been seeing them a lot lately. What's the deal? Because then the other thing you can kind of connect to, and this, you know, this kind of stays within states and localities, is who the doctors that, you know, who the doctors are, who the economists are, who's putting together those life care plans. And what you find out is it's a lot of the same people. And then you find out, well, you know what? Actually, we have three or four depositions of that person where we ripped him to shreds. So here you go. Here's the plan. Here's the game plan. And those are the kind of things I think, you know, you would agree that when we go to our meetings and things like that, that's what they always talk about, is our experts, and say, well, I've deposed that guy several times and here's what you do to get him. We do plenty of that. And it's also the other thing too, with the fact that we have such experienced people that are specialized in the trucking space. And that's really what, you know, for me, I can't stress that enough, is whether it's defense counsel or claims people, to develop that specialty.
I agree with you. The expertise comes from handling a very specific type of litigation. It's critical to getting great outcomes. So how do you find talented defense lawyers? You mentioned the churn, people leaving firms, going in-house, whatever the reason. How do you find the new ones, the up-and-comers?
Yeah, I know. That is really the thing. And, oh boy, because I think there's a lot of different approaches to it. And especially in the insurance world this time, I think if you had anybody in my position or comparable, you know, they talk about not necessarily the great resignation and that, you know, that whole concept. You know, it's real in some industries. I think in claims, it's there a little bit. But what happened, what we've seen more of, is a lot of, not necessarily job hopping, but that that there's been a lot more open spots that get filled, and somebody can go to another company or another carrier, another TPA, whatever it is, get a decent pay bump. And then what happens from there, you don't necessarily know. So that it's not just necessarily churn in that way. It's not churn like vertically, it's more churn horizontally, if that makes sense. Yep. So that's really a lot of what we've seen. So what it does, it makes it difficult to retain talent. I shouldn't say difficult to retain talent, but everybody is really very, very focused on retaining talent in the industry, certainly my company, to try and create, you know, the best possible culture that we possibly, that you can. And then what that does is I really think it's so much of it is just it's word of mouth and networking. And there's been a lot of things that have come along. You know, I think I always joke that I've never had business cards, you know, and I've been here a little over 2 years and I haven't felt the need to them for one thing. I mean, you know, a lot of time was remote over the last couple of years, but I just say I'm on LinkedIn and I'll connect with you tomorrow or I'll connect with you right now or whatever it is. So there are a lot of things like that. You know, LinkedIn, and then, you know, as far as job boards go, I know at my last job, we used Indeed a lot and were able to, you know, to get things that way. That whole concept of finding employment has changed so much just, you know, with social media, LinkedIn, and then with other kinds of more advanced and more, more focused systems. And I don't know if that was like a, you know, if Indeed was like an outgrowth of an eHarmony type of thing where, you know, where there's more information about people so you can match better. But I think there's kind of a crossover there. But really at the end of the day, you know, I think it really does come down to the actual networking and word of mouth and reputational uprightness, I guess is trying the word that I would think of is that if you have a good offering, people will know that. And I think that's really one of the things. What more specifically, since there was kind of the transition that we had to do with expertise, that's really where, you know, where conferences and mentorship really enters the picture. I do see that a lot in terms of developing younger talent. And I think especially in the defense part, you see that nowadays. It's even more acute because it's hard to try cases when you're young.
Yeah,
I think on the claim side and as far as trucking and transportation, I think it's a little bit it's a little bit easier just because trial experience is so hard to come by nowadays. Unless you have, again, I was so fortunate to come up the way I did, and the story that I don't want to digress too far, but the story I always like to tell is that in Illinois, everybody, you know, if you for the summer bar. You know, you pass that, everybody gets sworn in the first Thursday in November. And since I had already been at the CTA as a law clerk for a while, I got sworn in on Thursday and I was by myself in front of a jury on Monday morning. So, I just don't know how you can do that nowadays. I think there's, you know, if you're a young district attorney or state's attorney or, you know, something like that in criminal courts, I think you're able to do that. It's not like you're going to have a murder case that, you know, the first day, but I think there's a lot of trial experience that way. But in the civil world, it's really, really hard to do that. And to start out with young associates, just, you know, fresh out of law school, it's hard to get them trial experience.
That is so true. I know the Gallagher Bassett has a strong brand when it comes to recruiting for talent, having been ranked one of the world's most ethical companies year over year.
It is a point of pride for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about technology and its impact on what you do. How has it changed claims handling and litigation for you, Max?
Yeah, I've seen the transition to paperless offices, right? Yeah. Everything is paperless now, not just in terms of data processing and data storage, that sort of thing. And also it just makes everything so much faster and cheaper. There's a lot more streamlining, and I think what that allows to do and what we run up with, and, you know, even on a daily basis is making sure that resolution managers, you know, or claims adjusters, that's another discussion we could have sometime, but resolution managers are working on things that move the claim forward, that involve actual human judgment and that sort of thing, and try to move as much of the mechanics of claim handling, which remain considerable, But as far as moving those mechanics away, and that even comes down to bill pay, you know, litigation management systems, GB is really good about that with the GBLMP litigation management program. And, you know, I know you've seen these, you know, we've all seen this, that sort of thing with legal acts, bottom line, and all those kind of things that have come along. And with, you know, with things like Claims Edge or, you know, docket management systems, I think they've come so far, at least in, you know, in my time. And I remember back at the, you know, the first, we used to get like the printout, you know, every Friday for the next week of things. And, you know, you can still do that. And it was always, I thought it was a really cool thing that we'd have the docket meeting at, you know, at the law firm I was at every 2 o'clock on Friday. And it was on Friday, so it was, you know, kind of fun. You know, but that's where we kind of went over everything. And I think that is that's done in such a different way now.
Yeah.
It always cracks me up, too, because there's still things about Outlook that I learn every day. So much more. And I, you know, I don't even, once you start getting into things like the metaverse and how much, you know, you talk to engineers nowadays and reconstructionists and how much you can do to visually represent things. And create, do recreations and do simulations and things like that, where it's almost where you can, you know, where you can convey thoughts and convey images in such a way where it's, if it's in video, it has much more impact. And then, you know, then you start getting into questions of what is the truth. And then you start getting into, well, you know, we're still, if it's in trial, it's done in a persuasive manner, you know, persuasive way. Even though it's, you know, it's offered as objective evidence. And I remember this when I was the second chair back in on a larger trial in 2004. There was an appellate decision that had just come down in the second district in the Illinois appellate court. And it was a Hiscott versus Scott or something like that. And it had to do with simulations that engineers were, you know, simulations and animations. And it had to be connected to actual physical data. And I think that, you know, that the vintage on that case was 2003. And I just think of how long ago that was and how much simulation and animation technology has advanced since then. I think the rule still stays the same and the concepts of it makes the same, that it has to be grounded in physical objective reality or, you know, objectively verifiable reality. But that's really, see, you know, that's a whole branch of this discussion. But the way that I would see it is that in the claims world, what we're trying to do is to maximize the human element, maximize the things that still need a human judgment. I always go back to judges. I mean, that's why they're called judges, right? Because they have to make decisions. And that's, you know, and that's what we all do, and that's what the claims professional does, but maximizing the time that they have to do that to apply to the claims, and that's where they add the most value. You know, you apply the acumen and wisdom experience in making the decisions for, you know, for the best possible outcome on a claim and removing the things that don't require that or as much of that. And I think for, you know, I think this is, you know, the discussion that you've had 100 million times, or nowadays, especially with AI, that really sits in the middle of that. That's where those two meet, and that's where things get really interesting, for better or worse, probably.
That's a great observation. There are so many things that can be gigantic time sucks, right?
Time suck is the word.
That don't really, you know, they're necessary, but they don't allow for the opportunity for strategic thinking. They're distractions. And if you can eliminate those or reduce those or improve the workflows around that, as we're doing with Claim Edge, it can make a huge difference because it just gives you more time to think deeply, to focus on what's the right strategy, what's the best resolution approach to this thing. Because you know that, you know, 95% plus of cases are going to settle at some point anyway, and how do we get that result? How do we get there faster? So I think that we've both seen a lot in the the way technology has changed litigation and litigation management and those kind of things. One other thing I did want to ask you about, because I'm sure you've got a front row seat to it, is accident severity. And kind of what we're seeing. I know the NHTSA reporting said that for the second or third year in a row, highway deaths are up. I presume that highway injuries likewise are also up. So you're probably seeing that. Do you see anything stopping that trend? And does technology have a role that could be played to help with that, right? Help reduce that carnage?
It's a noteworthy development because I don't necessarily know if drivers have become less safe or less attentive. I mean, I think you have the cell phone and, you know, you have hands-free regulations and it's not quite the same thing, but there's still plenty of elements of distractions that are out there. But I feel like a lot of the impact of that has already been absorbed. I think you need to really drill down on what the new data is and what the circumstances are to that, whether it's, kids and newer drivers. And I don't know if they've learned things the same way because they've spent, so much more time in front of screens on average. And I say on average, right? But they've spent so much more time in simulated environments or in front of screens than certainly I did. But, going back more and more, it's less and less. And I think when the more you get away from that, I don't know if it's an impact of not, you're less removed from consequences, maybe. I don't know. I mean, and if you're just because the screen time, it's not, you can get killed on a video screen. It's not the same thing. So you get injured in real life. And I think there's just more of an apprehension of that. I don't know if that's one of the things. Medical emergencies, I think, is there's been a little bit more of those of late. That's an alarming trend. And I don't know what, as far as technology goes, but as far as the technology question, obviously the next thing is autonomous vehicles and what that will do. And from everything I've seen, I mean, this has been something from, the last couple of years and since I've been involved in a fleet and just as much now, but since I've been involved in a fleet, when is this technology going to take hold? The presentation where the AI part of it it doesn't quite pick up what humans pick up quite yet. And maybe it will, maybe it won't, but it's still not a person that can react or, and that's, again, that's also a for better or worse thing. One of the really good analogies I feel like is the debate about automated and digital strike zones in baseball.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot. I think that those debates are akin to each other because it's hard to mechanize those things. And these are fascinating questions these are things that have been around. They've accelerated, obviously, especially as the technology's caught up to the thought on it. And it's really at the human element is, I keep coming back to that, but these are things that were talked about in the Bertrand Russell, Aldous Huxley days, in the 20s and the 30s. But now the technology actually exists to where these are, the concerns are a lot more real. And we've been, the defense bar has been concerned about it for a while, when does it become a requirement to have certain technology and when can you be held liable for not having it? I haven't seen anything yet. I might be missing out and not be quite up to speed in this jurisdiction or that jurisdiction where there has been a claim that survived summary judgment or survived a motion to dismiss somewhere and went to the jury and liability was imposed on that theory for not having technology. And I think that's one of those things that, especially coming up where I came up in the Illinois legal environment, it was always one of those things, especially with the CTA, that a lot of the more novel theories of liability had to do with them not providing something and not mm-hmm. providing, some kind of security or some kind of safety, whether it was violent acts on an L platform or something like that, and failing to provide security. Or, one of the ones was where there's a couple places where the L runs at ground level. And like what security devices were there to keep people from walking down the tracks?
Yeah.
And I think there's some analogies to be made there. And different jurisdictions are going to act about that as a different way. But that's a wave that I think is just starting to form. And I apologize if I am behind the law on that a little bit, but I haven't heard of anything about requiring lane departure or requiring, you know, dash cam or requiring these things that have become really, really industry standard nowadays, even if they're not required by the federal regulations or any state regulations.
Yes, it will definitely be interesting to watch how that unfolds in the evolution of judge-made common law, right?
Right. And that's what I say. I'm kind of surprised because we've been talking about it for a couple of years now.
The other thing that can happen, though, is when these technologies don't work, like collision avoidance systems. So it's not just a negligent operation claim, but also a product liability claim, right?
You know, the joke that, you know, it's just kind of, instead of insurance defense lawyers, we're all going to be product liability lawyers someday.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Max, I have really enjoyed this conversation with you today. If anybody wants to get in touch with you after this, what's the best way to reach you?
Sure. And thanks again, Jim. Happy to be here. I'm always happy to have these kind of discussions, certainly. So thank you for having me and thanks for the opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, I go back to what I said before on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn and it's, you know, Max. I think I have it as Maxwell and it's Brusky. And then, I'm at Gallagher Bassett, email there. It's just Max. _ my last name, Brusky at gbtpa.com is my email. But I say again, LinkedIn is just, I've always been a fan of it and I continue to be a fan of it to this day.
It was a real pleasure to have Max Brusky as a guest on the Claim Edge podcast. I hope you enjoyed our conversation about trucking lawsuits, technology, and litigation management. As Max said, if you want to connect with him, you can email him at Gallagher Bassett or find him on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening today. If you like this episode of Claim Edge, please subscribe on your favorite podcast channel and share it with your colleagues and friends. Until next time, this is Jim Chapman on the Claim Edge podcast, signing off.